You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ho-hum, and how sweet it is to be able to say it. With that, welcome into a new episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Sunday morning, the Rockets are now winners of back-to-back games, putting them back to 500 at 11-11 on the 2018-2019 season, the latter courtesy of a 121-105 victory over the Chicago Bulls at Toyota Center on Saturday evening. It was the second night of a back-to-back for the Rockets, but they took care of business in the first half of the game, going up by as many as 19 points early, extended the lead to 20 in the fourth quarter, and thankfully had a lot of garbage time late in the game to get in the end of their bench, but more importantly, get some time off for their regulars. For the Rockets, all five starters were in double figures. They were led by James Harden, 30 points, 7 assists on just 16 shots, made 6 of 11 behind the arc. Chris Paul playing the second night of a back-to-back, coming off the shelf, missing 3 games with a sore hamstring. Well, to be able to play both ends of a back-to-back, playing about 30 minutes per game in each, 12 points and a season-high 13 assists on the back end. Yeah, I think he's feeling just fine. Clint Capella, 18 points, 15 rebounds, more of the same we expect from him. Both P.J. Tucker and James Ennis in double figures, 11 and 10 respectively. Eric Gordon off the bench, 15 points, made 3 of his 8 threes, plus 16, which is a team best in the plus minus. So it continues a very good week for him that started a week ago in Cleveland, the turnaround of Eric Gordon that was long overdue. Nene made his season debut, 4 points, 3 boards. More importantly, he sopped up 12 minutes off the bench that the Rockets really needed help on, especially on this night 2 of a back-to-back. Daniel House, 17 minutes, 6 points, but it's more his energy, his activity level, actually passed Gary Clark in the rotation for the first time. Gary Clark did not get rotation minutes in quite a while. House seemed to beat him to those minutes. We'll have more on that in the second segment of our 3 points recap as we make our way through, both recapping this 121-105 win over the Bulls and also looking forward to the 3-game road trip the Rockets have upcoming this week to Minnesota, Utah, and Dallas. But to lead with, let's talk about what happened Saturday night. It was very pedestrian. The Rockets now 11-11, but we know that they should be a lot better than that. The Bulls are 5-19, so we know going in that Houston is the better team. And thankfully, even on night 2 of a road back-to-back, or road on the front end, home on the back end, the Rockets went out and methodically took care of business. They built a 19-point lead in the first half, played very well right out of the gate, which is the best thing that you can do when you're in that situation because eventually your legs probably are going to tire. So the key is to get yourself playing with a headwind. And by that I mean if the other opponent, especially a younger one like the Chicago Bulls, is able to eventually take advantage of your tired legs or just mental lapses that naturally come in these back-to-back settings, ultimately, you have enough of a lead that eventually all it takes is one or two counter punches and they go away. The Bulls did cut it as close as 4 points in the third quarter, I believe, but because the Rockets had such a big lead to start with, it felt like all it was going to take was one run to put them away late in the third, early in the fourth quarter. That's exactly what happened. The Rockets built the lead up as large as 20. Only reason the final was 16, and that still covered. The Rockets went in favored by 14, was because the Rockets had 3 minutes of extended garbage time. And to me, that's the biggest takeaway of all of this, is how for a second consecutive night, the Rockets did not have to overextend any of their regulars. This was a game for the Rockets. It was the 3rd and 4 nights, and there's also going to be a 3 and 4 night stretch when they get to Minnesota for the next game on Monday. So it's very important when you're in one of these stretches in the schedule where there's not a lot of off days, not to have to do what the Rockets had to do too often during that 4-game losing streak, and they weren't even getting wins when they were doing that, which is extending James Harden well over 40 minutes per game. The same for P.J. Tucker, even Eric Gordon from time to time. Well, in this one, we talked about limiting it in San Antonio on the front end because, of course, the Rockets won by 31 points. That makes everything easy. But in this one, Chris Paul played 31 minutes. James Harden played 30. P.J. Tucker, 31. James Ennis, 25. Clint Capella had a team high, and that was only 33 minutes. Eric Gordon limited to 31. So none of your regulars, because you went out and took care of business, none of them had to overextend themselves, and they should be pretty fresh once you're playing a suddenly revitalized Minnesota Timberwolves team, even without Jimmy Butler. I guess even without isn't the right way to phrase it. It seems to be directly because that cloud has been lifted. But Monday, on paper, it's a tougher game than Saturday. Well, one thing you need to do, besides the obvious of just simply respecting the game, is go out, take care of business on the front end so that you can rest those legs to be in peak performance for the tougher game on the other side. And that's what the Rockets did on Saturday against the Bulls. Now, this isn't to say that Saturday was a banner game. They weren't nearly as crisp as they were Friday night in San Antonio. But the reason I'm not that discouraged is that it's explainable, especially in the context of when and how they struggle, that some of it is attributable to the back-to-back factors. Because, for example, the first half of the game, the Rockets gave up just 46 points. The defense seemed locked in. Then the second half of the game, when it was largely over and or the legs were starting to go, they gave up 59. That's somewhat similar to what happened on Friday night in San Antonio when they held the Spurs to just 47 points in the first half. For the second half, the Spurs ended up scoring nearly 60. Well, a lot of that had to do with the margin of the game and regulars just trying to take it a little bit easy for the obvious benefits of rest, especially then because you have a game the very next night. But the Rockets, when it mattered, again, racing out to that 19-point lead, which is what gave them the cushion they needed to kind of coast the rest of the way, the defense was locked in. Turnovers, they did have 14 compared to just 5 in San Antonio. Well, I hate to say it, but the 5 is an unsustainable rate. I mean, that would be an all-time best if the Rockets were going to continue at that pace, and that's not realistic. But in this one, James Harden, it makes sense with some of the burden that he's asked to carry. He had 7. That's a touch too high. But other than that, it's not like 14 as a team is astronomically high. Certainly not like the game in Washington when James had 11 by himself. But even within the context of rising turnovers, and some of it is attributable to the back-to-back factor, but it felt like a lot of them came in waves. There was a stretch late in the second quarter, and I think also in the third, where they had 3 or 4 in succession. And while that's frustrating, it's also reflective, in my opinion, of a dynamic in which the Rockets feel like they have the game, and maybe they're taking a few too many liberties, if you will, based on the lead of the game, and of course based on trying to rest up their bodies, maybe have a little bit of fun out there. When it actually mattered, it felt like they were still pretty tight with the ball. This was not a game in which the Rockets just did not value possessions on a consistent basis. There will be 2 or 3 minute stretches when they look at the film that they're going to want to correct, but I did not think it was nearly as widespread of a problem as it was on the road trip. And even if you look at the box score and say 14 is a lot bigger than 5, well, it's not like 14 is all of a sudden that concerning just by normal NBA rates anyway. The bottom line is that the box score was pretty damn ordinary. Rockets shot 50% from the field, 39% from 3, out-rebounded Chicago 47-41. It's nothing that will stand out. Turnovers, the Rockets had 14, the Bulls had 13. We were just discussing that. But generally, the Rockets just had more players. And after a start to the season, really the first quarter, in which the Rockets clearly did not match what you would think their box score in terms of the players on their roster would do, it's nice to see a game in which nothing really stands out. No one had a career night. No one shot out of their minds. No, it's pretty ordinary. The Rockets were just the better basketball team. It's normal. And for once, it's nice to say that it's normal after a start to the year for the Rockets that hasn't been anything but. Kudos to the Rockets for that. And one of the big benefits that you're able to reap once you get back to a normal state, so to speak, is that you should not just get some more wins. Now they've won 2 in a row to get back to 500 at 11-11. But you should be good enough to also get some blowout wins, which they have the last 2 nights. And those blowout wins are huge for the Rockets going forward, because I think they know that some of the regulars who haven't been injured, at least of late, that being James Harden, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, etc., their minutes have been far too high. Well, not just winning, but winning in blowout fashion is the key to getting their average minutes down, getting them some time off to compensate for the ultra-high workload they had to take on during that 4-game losing streak in which Chris Paul and Gerald Green went out, among others. Well, so far, so good. 2 back-to-back wins for the Rockets, both by double figures. Actually, average 16 in this one, 31 in Chicago. So yeah, average nearly 25 points, the margin for the Rockets the last 2 nights. Finally, their point differential is positive on the season. But more importantly, not just getting the win, but being able to rest the bodies that have been taxed and so overextended of late. it's the healthiest the Rockets roster has felt in some time. And of course, it comes at a very opportune point with a tough 3-game road trip in Minnesota, Utah, and Dallas starting this Monday evening in Minneapolis. Now, jumping back into the program, we spent much of the first segment discussing how, well, ordinary this win was and how good it is to have an ordinary win. There was one thing, and you have to go down the rotation to see it, that was a little less ordinary, and that was the usage of Daniel House as the eighth or ninth man off the bench, depending on how you look at it. Eric Gordon, Nene, Gerald Green, and then you have one more because we know Mike D'Antoni is not going to play a 10-man rotation in the regular season. So tonight, we saw Daniel House jump Gary Clark for those minutes. And it's very interesting because a lot was made of Gary Clark, and rightfully so. He was a rookie playing very well, but Clark's presence was especially hyped up because it played at least some role in the decision to let Carmelo Anthony go. And given Carmelo Anthony is a Hall of Famer, I get why there's a lot of fixation on that. However, I don't think it's as much about Clark as it was about Melo. Now, of course, he played a role, and that the Rockets needed someone to be able to step in and eat those minutes that were previously going to Carmelo Anthony. But when the Rockets moved on from Melo, it was less about an endorsement and buying into the idea that Gary Clark is a permanent rotation fixture. It was more about the fact that, given the slow start to the year, they wanted to get back to the style at which they played a year ago, and Carmelo Anthony, with his deficiencies on the defensive end, at age 34 and year 16, they didn't feel that he'd be able to do that, that they'd be able to do that with him on the floor on a regular basis, and they weren't sure if he'd be confident or comfortable in a role at the end of the bench where he's racking up a lot of DNP CDs. So Gary Clark made more sense in terms of the roster construction at the time and filling the roles that they had a year ago. Some of them, of course, went to Ariza and Bamute, the minutes, that is. So with Gary Clark, yes, he's got a lot of tools defensively. He's very instinctual. And he started the year shooting decent from three. Well, now, as we're in December, he's shooting below 30% from the field and about 27% from three. And ever since that Golden State game, which he hit three big three-pointers, and it seemed he was getting so much due nationally, that was also the same day the Rockets issued the statement that they were going to be parting ways with Melo. Well, in the eight games since then, he's shooting just 20.8% from the field and 19% from three. No matter what your defense is, that's not going to cut it because defenses are not going to respect you as a spacing option, and that just mucks the Rockets' offense up. And, of course, a week ago, they signed Daniel House. He's played pretty well, but it's not like House has been shooting the lights out either. He's shooting 37.9% with the Rockets, just 22% from three. He is a little bit more active in being able to take the ball off the dribble, do some things off the bounce, attacking the rim, whereas Clark, more of just a stationary shooter on the offensive end of the floor. Defensively, they have fairly similar profiles. House 6'7", Clark 6'8". It feels like Clark is a little bit longer and has very active hands. So you can see what the Rockets see in Gary Clark. But I don't think when they made that move of Melo, despite what the national narrative was, that it was about, well, Gary Clark is going to be what we hoped Melo would be. That was how some people played it, because just from a very topical, simplistic overview, that's the easiest way to make sense of it all. In reality, it's that Gary Clark was playing well then, and did it have a role in it? Of course, Gary Clark's emergence, it gave them someone else that right then and there, they could give the minutes to make it somewhat palatable to cut Melo and have no one, well, they haven't cut him, but they've effectively done the same thing, to where you have someone else that's able to give you some of those minutes, especially on a team that's really had very few stretches which they've been fully healthy this season. But the thing with Gary Clark, he's got a great motor, a great attitude. You can tell he's coached well in college. I think the Rockets are bullish on his long-term future, but in this league, if you can't shoot, I don't care how good you can play on one end of the court or the intangibles that you bring. If teams don't have to respect you at that position, that 3-4 hybrid from behind the three-point arc, it's going to be very, very difficult for you to play. And I think that's why the Rockets are trying Daniel House, because it's not that House, as said earlier, it's not like he's shooting the lights out either, but the difference is, number one, he's not really shying away. Too often lately, we've seen the Rockets' offense kind of get gummed up because Clark isn't even willing to take an open look. And I think some of that's kind of his confidence eroding a little bit from going through this stretch in which last eight games he's shooting below 20% from three. House is always willing to take it, but he also provides an additional dynamic of being able to make something happen off the bounce. Whereas with Clark, since his value offensively is primarily around his ability to shoot, if that's not there, it's not like he's going to be all of a sudden attacking off the dribble in his first year of the NBA. So House is just a well-rounded player, a more well-rounded player, that is. That's not to say that I think the Rockets are committing to House long-term, but I think for the time being, you can see why they're giving him those minutes over Gary Clark. And those of us that assume that, well, since Carmelo Anthony was gone and Gary Clark got the minutes, that they must see Gary Clark as a long-term fixture. I think it's now a bit of a cold dose of water on us that it's not so much about Gary Clark. It was more about Melo not fitting the roles that the Rockets want and what they had a year ago. And the interesting thing, long-term, we've spoken a lot the last couple of days about roster spots, because even though the Rockets have got it going the last two nights, look, we know the depth issues that have plagued them throughout this season. We know how, you know, the two-game winning streak they're currently on versus the four-game losing streak they just came off. Biggest difference, Chris Paul and Gerald Green. And it's not just two bodies. It's the fact that after the top 9 or 10 in the current Rockets rotation, things fall off a cliff very, very quickly for a number of reasons. Yet, even though there's this absence of depth at the end of the bench in terms of guys that can fill in rotation roles if there are injuries, at the same time, it's not easy for the Rockets to create a roster spot. For luxury tax reasons and potential trade reasons, they'd like to wait on Melo and Michael Carter-Williams until December 15th when they can officially be traded. It also opens up other possibilities around the league because that's the date in which players who signed in the offseason can be dealt. They also have a couple of projects in Jochi and Isaiah Hartenstein. They've had guys out injured in Nene and Brandon Knight, although thankfully Nene is back and it seems Brandon Knight is not too far away. Now, the Rockets did have an open roster spot entering the season, but a lot of us have been operating under the assumption for a long time that when Gary Clark's 45 days expire in December, he's currently on that two-way, that he would just be converted to a standard contract. Well, now, I'm not going to say because of one game that he's not in the rotation that he's not going to get that contract. That would be incredibly premature, just as it was premature to think that when the Rockets cut Melo and Gary Clark was playing minutes, it was premature to think then that he was a long-term fixture. Well, it would also be premature to say after one game in which he didn't play that all of a sudden he's at risk of being cut. But it does tell you that it's an option. And to clarify, cut's not the right word, because the Rockets would still have his rights. He would just have to go back to being a G League player the way most people envisioned him going into this season. But if the Rockets to add another depth piece to the end of their bench, like they added Gerald Green last year, like they theoretically could with street free agents like Nick Young, Corey Brewer, both of those guys have played for Mike D'Antoni in the past, Anthony Morrow, a proven 3-and-D type player. We've talked a lot about the struggles the Rockets have had in creating a roster spot because they like to wait until December 15th to get Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony off the books in a more clean manner, be it a trade or a waiver claim, or perhaps a waiver claim that's forced just by the leverage of being able to trade them. Well, while MCW and Melo make the most sense as far as clearing a roster spot, those are not the only avenues that the Rockets have at their disposal. Gary Clark, it's not a given, in my opinion, that when his 45 days runs out, and I'm not clear what the exact date is, it'll be in mid-December, but it's not a given at this point, especially if he falls out of the rotation, that you give him a standard roster spot. You could send him back down to the G League where he could continue to work on his three-point stroke. And keep in mind with Gary, it's not necessarily an indictment of him so much as I think some of it's just a reality of how hard it is for rookies in the current NBA. Because one of the bigger adjustment things for young players like Gary Clark that are coming out of college is the longer three-point line, basically 3 feet further out than where Gary is used to shooting from at Cincinnati. It's a big adjustment. We have not seen it that much in Houston because, generally speaking, the Rockets, especially the Mike D'Antoni era, they're so built around three-pointers and winning now that they tend to skew towards immediate help. They have not had very many draft picks playing, period, and what few they've had, like DeAnthony Melton, well, they've ended up traded very early in their career. So the Rockets have not dealt with some of these rookies that go through growing pains. They happen a lot in the NBA. They just haven't happened in Houston because of circumstances. Well, now you've got one, Gary Clark. I don't think he's so much hit the rookie wall. He's only played 21 games. I don't think it's so much that he's fatigued. I think that this is just something that happens with younger players trying to convert from a three-point line that's, you know, nearly 20 feet in college to one that's 23 feet or so in the NBA. I don't think the Rockets are too worried about it. The Rockets have shown over the years they are very willing to gamble on players whose weakness is their jump shot, because they think that is one of the more correctable things with their shooting coaches, with work on the practice court, those types of things. But if Gary doesn't figure it out, then, yeah, they can continue to work on him this year at the G League level, and they can use that roster spot, which a lot of us over the past month thought would be for Gary Clark's conversion, and use that instead on getting one of those street free agents to fill out the end of the bench depth that we've been talking about. That is another avenue you can go and utilize to create that roster spot. Now, I'm not going to say right now, after one game of Gary Clark not being in the rotation, that that's going to happen. That would be very premature. All I'm saying is that we need to be aware of the possibility, because to take Gary Clark out of the rotation altogether, it shows you, and it's not just a one-off. His minutes have been steadily decreasing of late, ever since that Golden State game, which he played 27 minutes, 23, then 18, then 14, 22, 19, 20, 18. And that's despite being on a Rockets team that had an awful bench and was looking desperately for any help they could get. Now, it's been pretty clear under the radar, there have been much bigger issues, so we haven't fixated on it too much on this show, but it's been pretty clear that Mike D'Antoni's trust in Clark isn't what it was in the middle of November. I don't think that it's all that abnormal, because again, he's a rookie, he's adjusting to the longer three-point line, there's lots of dynamics here, but big picture, what I think the big takeaway is that besides the obvious of, well, those minutes appear to be going to Daniel House now, it also could be another avenue the Rockets look at to create a roster spot to fix some of those depth issues. Not going to say it's done yet after just one example, one game of him being out of the rotation, but I do think it's something to keep your eye on as we move forward into December. Final point as we wrap up our 3 points recap of Saturday night's 121-105 win by the Rockets over the Bulls, and as we chat on this Sunday morning. This final segment isn't going to be so much about the Bulls game, because again, the highlight to me is how pedestrian it was, but let's look forward to how the Rockets can build on this, because they were two games under 500 before this recent stretch. Now you're back at 500. The key is, can you finally get some separation above 500? They had it just before Thanksgiving, that five-game winning streak to put them at 9-7. Then they had the four-game blip in which everything was exaggerated by the Chris Paul and Gerald Green injuries, the rotation depth compromised, all those types of things that we've been discussed for the last few days. Well, now we finally have some optimism, and how do you keep it going? Because on paper, this is not an easy stretch. At Minnesota on Monday night, at Utah on Thursday night, at Dallas, rapidly improving Dallas, that is, on Saturday night, a team that beat you by 20. And the good news as I see it, of course the Rockets appear to be healthy, and Chris Paul playing 30 minutes per game on both ends of the back-to-back, that makes me feel a ton better about that hamstring. But the real takeaway, in my opinion, if the Rockets are back, these are two teams, especially the front two, Minnesota and Utah, that they should excel against, because we saw it this past season. Of course, those are the two teams the Rockets beat in the first two rounds of the playoffs, but they had certain matchup advantages throughout the year. With Minnesota, it was predominantly that they were able to put Karl-Anthony Towns on skates. They were able to expose him, either staying with Clint Capella away from the ball, or when he had to switch on to Chris Paul or James Harden. With Towns' defensive liabilities, the Rockets were just too diverse, too many playmakers were able to attack. It was a similar story, albeit in a different way, with Rudy Gobert and the Utah Jazz. Of course, Gobert, a much better defensive player overall than Towns is, but generally speaking, what the Jazz do defensively, they force you to your weak area. And since the Rockets added Chris Paul, and we remember how dynamic he was in Game 4 and especially Game 5, picking up for a sick James Harden to close out the Western Conference semis, the Jazz, they force you to your weakest spot on the floor. And Rudy Gobert's defensive flexibility inside is a part of being able, their ability to do that. Well, the Rockets, they have a unique ability with Chris Paul and James Harden to attack you at all levels. Of course, they can make things happen off the dribble and get to the rim, and they're finally converting shots, the layups that they did not early in the season. Of course, they can hit threes. It's Mike D'Antoni's team. Of course, they have the ability to do that. But then, in addition to those things, after adding Chris Paul and his ability to pull up in the mid-range game, and we saw that in the playoff series between the Rockets and the Jazz, that's what makes Houston such a difficult matchup for Utah, and it's why last year the Rockets played the Jazz 9 times. They won 8 of them, including 4 games to 1 in the playoffs. So if the Rockets are back, this big three foundation we've been talking about, I know there's no Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, yada, yada, but the foundation of the Rockets, Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, all of those guys are healthy now. Saturday night, Capella, 18 and 15. Chris Paul, 12 and 13, that being a season best, 13 assists. James Harden, 30 points, 7 assists on just 16 shots, 6 of 11 from 3. That's the foundation the Rockets had a year ago. And on paper, I know those are tough road games, but the Rockets from a year ago, they were able to benefit from the matchups and those two. And that's why I'm kind of looking forward to it. Is it going to be easy? No. But if they're back, those are advantageous matchups for Houston, and I think they've got a good chance to win. With Dallas, it's a little tougher to project because there's so many new pieces to this Mavs team this year. Of course, they did just beat the Rockets by 20 the other night, but that was a Rockets team without Chris Paul, without Gerald Green, without Nene in the middle of that tailspin. So I don't know that I'm going to say that Dallas is a bad matchup for the Rockets just yet, although given the way the Mavs continue to hover around 500 and we're now over a quarter of the way through the season, maybe we need to be open-minded to them as a playoff threat. We'll have to wait and see, but I don't have a strong sense of the matchup between those two just yet. Minnesota and Utah, however, and those are the first two of a road trip, I do. And I think a lot can be determined by how you start a road trip like this, because we've talked a lot this year about the spiraling effect. And for example, if you were able to get that overtime win in Detroit on the front end of that last three-game road trip, I don't think some of the bad habits are there that we saw on Monday in Washington. I think to some degree, there's some finger-pointing, there's some second-guessing, there's some slumped shoulders that happen when you don't get the results on the front end. On the flip side, if you are able to get the positive results, then it can kind of push you through the inevitable tough times that are going to come when you're playing quality teams on the road. So that's why, to some degree, I embrace this challenge because, no, it's not going to be easy. The Timberwolves have been winning a lot of games since trading Jimmy Butler. The Jazz, they've actually been a disappointment just like the Rockets this year in terms of overall record, but we know the talent is there for them to be much better than what their current record shows them to be. So it's not going to be easy for the Rockets. Both Minnesota and Utah are going to be playing with a sense of urgency, but it's the kind of matchup where we know these Rockets, when healthy, have had success. They like the matchup. Now, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to happen this week, but to me, it's a good opportunity to take stock, take inventory of exactly where the Rockets are. Because if they are back, these are the types of matchups that they had success against a year ago. And I know it's just two games, but it's two games in which the Rockets had positive point differentials of nearly plus 25 per game. They have to come in feeling pretty good about themselves. They should be healthy. They get an off day Sunday. So nothing's guaranteed, especially in this topsy-turvy Rockets season, which, you know, they lost five in a row, then they won five in a row, then they lost four in a row. Now they've won two in a row at nearly 25 points per game in differential. Nothing's a given, but this week will be a good opportunity to take stock of exactly where the Rockets are. And if they are back, then even though on paper it's a tough week, it's one that I feel pretty good about because many of the matchups that were there this past postseason when the Rockets won 8 of 10 against the Timberwolves and the Jazz, yeah, they should still be there this week as well. Anyway, on that positive note, this is where we will leave off. I think that's enough for us to say today because, well, now I'll enjoy the rest of my day off, watch a little bit of Texans football. I'll go out to NRG today. And then tomorrow we'll be back to talking about what happens on the basketball floor between the Rockets and the Timberwolves. And we see whether these matchup advantages that we've been discussing over the last few minutes actually play out when the Rockets and Timberwolves get together in Minneapolis. Until then, though, this is where we will leave off. If you want more content in the interim, the best place, as always, to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com. I think I mentioned the email address. If I didn't, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. But all of those are ways that you can access our prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, while we're on the subject of plugs, please check out Locked On Texans. That's our sister show on this great Locked On Podcast Network, which has local experts around the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, and college sports. You can find Locked On Texans the same places you find me at Locked On Rockets, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn, etc., etc. So listen to Locked On Texans, and you can subscribe to them the same way you subscribe to us. And the benefits of subscribing and also hopefully leaving a 5-star review. Not only do you get episodes right when they come out, but by boosting our subscriber bases and by leaving positive reviews, that's how we look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets and Locked On Texans as the only daily podcast covering these two fine Houston sports teams. Once again, the happy final from Chiyoda Center Saturday night. Rockets 121, Bulls 105. Rockets have now won two consecutive games and are back to 500 at 11-11 on the season through 22 games. With that, enjoy the rest of your Sunday and come back tomorrow when we'll be breaking down everything Rockets Timberwolves right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.